I will start with an approval of the agenda. Does anybody have any issues with the agenda as it stands? There are copies of it. Yep, go right ahead.
We also have a misprint.
Oh, God, that's
we have a misprint on the customer service committee as well. It is on the 15th, but the 15th is a Thursday.
So the Thursday and Wednesday just got flipped on this thing. Yeah. Sorry, say that again? The what? For the agenda?
Oh, I already gone looking at this.
Agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Step one at a time. Any other concerns about the agenda? Any objections to the agenda?
Those are part of the Lost in Transition that I need to just sit down. I need to sit down and do now that I'm responsible for them. So no. You don't have them. That's. It is what it is.
Okay. Well, then I will consider the agenda approved. I'm going to hold off for the moment on approving the minutes because you've just gotten the hard copy of them in front of you. So I will allow you to read those when you get bored over the course of the next hour or so and have some time to look at them. And then we'll approve them a little later in the meeting when you've had a chance to review them. With that, I am going to open it up to public comment. I see we actually have a few folks who are not on the rack in the room. If any of y'all would like to speak, I encourage you to do so. Go for it, Chris.
So I'm going to kind of preach to the choir tonight, but sometimes you got to do that. And I'm going to stay on script so I don't go over. I'm basing my comments today on rumors, but have some things to say that should be said whether the rumors are true or not. The RAC is vital. This is the only group of riders informing WMATA on changes that affect other riders aside from the AAC. I started coming to these meetings 8 years ago, and I've seen many people cycle through here. And whether or not I agreed with all of them, I knew the 21 people who sit around these tables are all we have. Yes, the RAC could be better, but the people cycling through, some at higher rates than others, that change is going to have to come from WMATA's board of directors and staff who support this group. When I think of the money spent on Mind Mixer and Amplify, and the money spent on PR campaigns and TV commercials, and the money spent on the Youth Advisory Council, which also appears to be another PR campaign, I can't help but think WMATA has the funds to support the RAC. For what they paid in pointless TV commercials, they could have staffed a RAC and AAC position for a year. Any failure of this group will be because WMATA simply doesn't respect the voice of the rider. And that will be a shame. Without us, there is no Metro. I ask that you continue to fight to make the RAC better and to keep it around. You are, after all we have. Thank you.
Chris, can you email that, what you just wrote? I mean, I don't know if you have emailed to the,
I can send it to RAC comments, but I don't know if it'll get to you.
It will.
Okay. It will. Okay. Send it now, and I'll send it to them as soon as they get it.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, for saying what we all feel.
Go right ahead.
My name is Kenneth Mitchell. My basically comment is probably a reiteration of what I've said in the past, is whether the bus option for the Select Pass will be expanded to all price points. And in my personal opinion, I think that, well, it'd be nice if they got rid of the transfer altogether, but if that's not possible, I think it'd be more useful if the Select Pass was more useful to people, basically the folks who do ride the bus and the train or vice versa, or one or the other, as opposed to, you know, giving them the option that if the trains too full or they want to take a bus this time, they're not nickel and dimed. I think, unfortunately, I think the overall, in my personal opinion, of course, is that people feel nickel and dimed. You know, whether it's nickel and dimed in the way the system is funded, nickel and dimed in the sense that if they hop off and go somewhere for, like, you know, to get a simple run and simple errand, they get back on, the nickel and dimed. You know, basically every other transit entity, seems like worldwide, has a pass of some, you know, some form or another. And we're not all, of course, fortunate enough to live next to a metro station, and we all know that there's not enough money to build a metro station next to all of us. It'd be nice if they could at least, you know, make the system as usable as possible for depending on your own situation or where you live or where you decide to go. And the other thing is, I know I went to the, I guess it was the budget meeting, I think it was last week, and a lot of people talked about, of course, the issue with in terms of high fares. It'd be nice if there was, like, maybe, like I know in Seattle, which is, I'm originally from the Washington area, they have a reduced fare option, which has to be approved, though, by people supplying either their previous tax return or either if they already qualify for something like, you know, reduced lunch or food stamps or some other public assistance as a means of verifying, and it's done on a yearly basis, so... you know, it's, of course, reviewed every year, whether you qualify or not, but it does open up making a transit affordable to folks, but also, you know, helping the agency itself. But those were, I guess, my 2 cents. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do any of the other members of the public have any desire to say anything? If so, you are welcome to. All right, then. I am going to turn this over then to Amy Custis to talk about the Metro Now Coalition. Amy, you get to sit at either the tall mic or the short mic.
Tall mic. I'm going to turn off short mic though.
I spend a lot of time in front of these kind of mics.
good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. My name is Amy Custis, and some of you know me possibly as the Deputy Director at the DC Region's Coalition for Smarter Growth. I'm also a longtime contributor at the blog Greater Greater Washington, so you may have seen my name there. But I am here tonight to talk to you on behalf of the Metro Now Coalition, which the Coalition for Smarter Growth, where I am Deputy Director, is a member of, but I want to be very clear and upfront because there's been some confusion online that Greater Greater Washington is not a part of. So I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Smarter Growth, on behalf of Metro Now. For those of you who aren't familiar, Metro Now launched about, my goodness, 90 days ago now as the culmination of many, many voices talking amongst one another and to one another about the need for dedicated funding and reform for WMATA. I don't think anyone in this room is unfamiliar with all of the news coverage and everything that's been going on there, so I'm going to save you that part of the public song and dance about why WMATA needs dedicated funding and reform, though I'm happy to answer questions on that if anyone has them. But I'm here tonight because the RAC is one of the best venues there are for talking to riders themselves about what is going on with Metro dedicated funding and reform. So there have been many voices over the years talking about the need for these things at Metro. And MetroNow was formed as a consensus-based coalition of business community members, activists, advocates, nonprofits, and also open to riders to tell our local elected officials and state elected officials that the time has come and that we are never going to overcome the challenges we face with DC region public transportation without dedicated funding and reform. People have frequently asked me, well, why the business community, why nonprofits, why not riders? The simple answer is that you can get seven riders together and make a very small splash on the internet, in mainstream media or anywhere else, or you can get seven organizations together and all of a sudden make the front page of the Metro section. We do, in fact, have any number of riders who have joined, but the honest truth is that it takes resources and influence to get the job done when it comes to getting our elected officials to support dedicated funding and reform. So MetroNow is one of many coalitions that has formed, and it continues to invite people in under a big tent to win dedicated funding and reform. I know I've said that a lot. That's like peanut butter and jelly or salt and pepper. You can't say one without the other. Dedicated funding and reform. Reform and dedicated funding. In 2018, and that is a tall order, but we do think it's possible. There is a legislative way forward to win reform and dedicated funding in 2018. It's a big, steep curve, but it is doable. For folks who are not familiar, the legislative sessions in Maryland and Virginia are a wee bit shorter than what we're used to here at the U.S. Capitol. They will be done by the time the warm weather has arrived. Virginia's is one of the shortest in the nation. We have about two more weeks before what's called crossover happens. Maryland's a little bit longer, but this is very much a February, March, maybe a little bit in April kind of a task. So MetroNow is looking for an all-hands-on-deck solution to get people involved to talk about dedicated funding and reform to their elected officials. The more people who are screaming about how important this is from the rooftops, or tweeting it, or calling their elected officials, or sending letters, or showing up, knocking on doors, going to lobby days, anything like that, the better chance and opportunity we have. And so while it has been certainly splashier, as I said, to get several businesses and nonprofit advocacy groups together, we are also doing everything we can now that we have a little bit of infrastructure in place to be able to amplify the public's voices, to get the word out and say that whether you are working with us or whether you don't support everything we do but pieces of it, we welcome folks to share under the hashtag MetroNow their thoughts, why Metro is important to them, how they rely on it, the need for Metro to have reform and dedicated funding, and why it's important to them. That is my 5 minutes. I promised that I would keep it fairly short so that I could take questions. So that's the basics about MetroNow. If you don't agree with everything in our platform, we would still love for you to speak out. I have yet to meet anyone in the DC region who doesn't think a functioning, safe, affordable, effective, reliable Metro system is not a good thing, and that is ultimately what we are all here for. So while there are differences in how to achieve it, we think that this season the battle is in Annapolis, the Johnny Wilson Building, and Richmond, and we want to get there, and we want to get everyone on board to help as much as we can. So that's the simple version, and I would be delighted to answer any questions that anyone, whether it's RAC members or audience members, have.
Okay. And for those of you who have not yet noticed, attached behind your agenda is a flyer with information about Metro Now, printed in color.
Fancy. I don't normally see it in color.
All right, starting the questions with Valerie.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So, and reform. What is and reform? I'm all for more money. Okay. I agree with more money. And reform.
That is an excellent question. I will say that Metro Now has purposefully kept things relatively at the 30,000-foot level, much to some people's frustration. But we are a big tent. I can give you a little bit more than and reform. Don't worry. I just want to point out that you're not going to get a detailed 14-point plan out of me or out of Metro Now, frankly. When we're talking about reform, what we are really talking about is an opportunity to give people confidence, whether that's legislators or the riding public or local government officials or really anybody, confidence that it's not business as usual at Metro, and so throwing more money at the system will result in positive changes. Where we think that makes the most sense and we think what is most doable is some changes to the board of directors. Probably looking at things that you have heard referred to as a reform board, things like getting rid of the jurisdictional veto come to mind, and I'm actually at this point going to shuffle through my pile of papers and make sure I'm reading to you the exact points since I have them. Rather than talking off of my sleeve, I will just appropriately give them to you. I live in writing copy all day, but speaking copy is not something I do a ton.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
Can you just give me a little bit of a hint here about why a smaller board is better for Metro?
We think that a smaller board hopefully can be a little bit more independent and can balance political and leadership priorities a little bit more effectively. Metro's current structure with all of the alternates is a bit unusual, and there is feeling among many people we have talked to at Metro Now that whether they have, you know, seen the system from the outside or from the inside, that bringing the board down to a smaller size, whether that is 9 or 5 or any, we don't have a right number, but just bringing it smaller makes it easier to function as a cohesive whole and look out for Metro. It makes it easier to be collegial. It makes it easier to look your fellow board members in the eye and have real meaningful discussions in Metro's best interest. Honestly, that's a fantastic question. One of the things that has become very apparent to us at the Coalition for Smarter Growth in particular is that there is enough frustration with Metro that dedicated funding without something going forward is politically unfeasible. So what reform looks like, it can mean many things to many people. We find the smaller board with, and here, I've got it, yes, I found it. I've written these talking points. No, it's totally fine. I thought I had them printed, but. So the smaller independent board will be a little less cumbersome for decision making, a little easier for a unified vision, hopefully, as I was saying before. Also, we would like to see no jurisdictional veto. We think that that would be helpful, again, once putting Metro's interests in front of any local jurisdictions. We would also like to see a technical expertise qualification. That's pretty self-explanatory. We would also like to see okay, this is wonky, but there's no getting around it, no dual fiduciaries. We'd prefer that board members representing both state and local jurisdictions not be put in that position of really board members should be the servant of one master, and that master is Metro. We also think while we're, you know, cleaning things up on the compensation front that all board members should receive equal compensation paid by WMATA, and that the board should, on a reporting basis, have to report out each year to the legislative bodies of each jurisdiction on the progress we're making.
Thank you. I'd love to talk more, but
Colin.
So thank you for answering Valerie's question, I think it makes perfect sense to have a board that's comprised largely of experts rather than people who are using it as a political stepping stone. All for that. The one thing that I am interested in, and I think some other members in the REC are interested in, is writer representation on the board. It's something that we've asked for previously. And I think, despite having the REC, it's important for writers to be, proportionally represented on, the decision-making body itself in some manner. So I would ask you to consider that. I guess my question for you is, one thing I noticed is no specificity on the improved operations front. While I understand that you're operating at the 30,000 foot level, and simultaneously kind of pursuing windows of opportunity on the legislative front, it's been my experience that legislators often ask the question, well, what do you want me to put in this bill? And so at what point will you get there, and will there be opportunities for public input?
Fantastic question. I will do my best to answer it, and if I miss pieces, it's not because I'm avoiding you, it's because I'm getting over being sick, not contagious, so please redirect me. So in terms of specific operational reforms, there are some things that I can tell you we are certainly not looking at. We are not looking at the board having the ability to unilaterally make changes to labor contracts. That's a frequently asked question between the lines. Things that we would like to see baked into those reports to the legislatures each year from the smaller board, consistent good metrics on improved customer service and communications, rider experience and transparency, a meaningful safety culture for both rail and bus operations, really strengthened training and standard operating procedures, capital and maintenance planning, program delivery based on industry-wide performance metrics, just to name a few. We'd also like to see transit-oriented development at locations next to Metro facilities better utilize existing capacity. And then you had a question, or you made a point about rider representation on the board. I think that does, though we haven't specifically, to my knowledge, ever explicitly talked about it, that does certainly fit within the realm of having some expertise about Metro and some interest there. I would love to take that back to our principals and make sure that they hear that.
Rebecca.
Thank you. I have questions about Metro now, who the members are. I think it's mostly big businesses. You mentioned nonprofits. I'd like to know a few of those. They're not on the website.
I saw
something about DC Affordable Housing Coalition. Is that correct?
So once again, I'm going to go to my perfect information as opposed to quoting off the top of my head.
Sure, I just want to finish my question.
Absolutely.
So the members of Metro now, and then the members or the representatives of Coalition for Smarter Growth, because I'm a little confused about the connection.
Sure, absolutely. So I will start with the Coalition for Smarter Growth, and we'll sort of work our way up. I am the deputy director at the Coalition for Smarter Growth, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that works locally in the D.C. region, for better, more equitable transit and land use policies throughout our region. Think sort of what MWCOG covers as the greater Washington region. We are a transit and smart growth advocacy nonprofit. We've been around for 20 years. We are funded by a mix of mostly foundation dollars, about a third, I always get this wrong about the exact numbers, about a third individuals, sort of the PBS viewers like you, and the balance corporate and organizational dollars. We are a six-person staff, or about to be six people again, I'm currently hiring, and we work on any number of issues ranging from bus lanes on 16th Street to downtown bus lanes through downtown. We've worked on streetcars in multiple jurisdictions. We worked very hard to get the 81-mile bus rapid transit plan approved in Montgomery County a few years ago. We have also worked over the years on things like the DC zoning update. We're currently working on the district comprehensive plan. We were founded 20 years ago by a number of traditional conservation and land use groups, folks like the Sierra Club and Chesapeake Bay Foundation. Who are some other ones? The Piedmont Environmental Council. They came together and they realized that working together on an interdisciplinary basis was actually really helpful and really great. And they hired our founding executive director, Stuart Schwartz, to continue that work after they had done it on an ad hoc basis. And 20 years later, we are a 501c3, still working on a day-to-day basis in that area across the region. 10 years ago, we combined forces with the Washington Regional Network for Sustainable Communities. CSG had been mostly Virginia-based, and the Washington Regional Network had been mostly DC and Maryland-based. The two were sharing offices, sharing staff, just made it official, as it were. So we work much along the lines of something like Sierra Club, but in the area of land use and transportation. Before I jump ship to another topic, did you have any follow-ups on that?
I mean, that's helpful. It's just concerning to me whenever I hear smarter growth, because I always wonder who's deciding that growth is smart and what populations the organization is thinking about. So it's helpful to know that you guys are focused on more like environmental or land use issues. I'm always interested to know that smart growth includes representation of traditionally underrepresented communities.
Yes.
Preventing against gentrification or preserving affordable housing in traditional neighborhoods. So I would ask you to
speak to that. We actually do a lot of work on affordable housing, primarily in the District of Columbia itself within district borders, but also across the region. We have been instrumental in getting DC's inclusionary zoning law passed. We've also worked on public land for public good, which for affordable housing nerds is otherwise known as affordable housing provisions in public land dispositions. And we tend to work with a lot of folks like DC Appleseed, DC Fiscal Policy Institute, Jews United for Justice on various affordable housing campaigns. We tend to fill a pretty niche. That there are lots of folks who do direct service provision. We are policy wonks and advocates. So our role is to push local governments to enact better policies that help on both a policy side and a supply side. So that's about 25 to 35% of the work we do, depending on our funding in any given year.
Cool. Thank you.
So that's CSG. Metro Now is a consensus-based coalition. There's an operating agreement. I do not have it in front of me. Can't read it to you. That came out of, there have been many different interests in the past 18 months or even going back longer than that, all working on metro issues. You probably saw folks like Federal City Council come out last year with the idea of a reform board. How many reports have there been in the past 2 years about, let's do this solution for Metro, let's do that. And we finally have lots of folks talking to each other, and Metro Now turned out to be sort of the place that coalesced. So we do have a pretty big tent. ranging from folks like Federal City Council and the Greater Washington Partnership to folks like the Coalition for Smarter Growth and the Southern the Southern Environmental Law Center. I never say them out loud. It's always SELC. I didn't want to get it wrong. ULI Washington, which is the Urban Land Institute, is also a member. And yes, some bigger corporations have come on. Having folks in Annapolis and in Richmond every day and in places like here tonight takes resources. And we certainly want to have a successful campaign. And so we are truly trying to be big tent and umbrella to make it possible for everyone who wants to be a part of MetroNow to be a part of MetroNow. To join, you do have to agree to the operating agreement and the principles of our platform and sign on to the operating agreement. And we are a consensus-driven partnership, which means that we have to have consensus before we have a position on anything, which is one of the other reasons that lots of things are at the 30,000 foot level.
What does that mean? Unanimous majority?
I hesitate because I don't have it in front of me.
No worries.
But I think asterisk star 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 star. I think it's consensus meaning unanimity. And there is the founders and the executive committee, and we're sort of the folks who are on all 14 conference calls a week. And I think it's actually 12. And who are, you know, in constant, I've had 4 texts from MetroNow folks in the time I've been at RAC tonight. So we are working on a day-to-day basis, and then there are different levels of involvement. So the 6 that you see on the founding members on the website, which are Federal City Council, Greater Washington Partnership, Coalition for Smarter Growth, Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce, the 2030 Group, and the Greater Washington Board of Trade, are core members who really got the ball rolling.
And what does that mean to be a core member? Did they pay a fee or did they, you know?
We were the ones who got the band together. We were the founding members.
Gotcha.
So.
I was wondering, are the TPs available online, the talking points? Or?
Most of them are.
Most of
them,
yes. In some shape or form,
yes.
I guess. Right? Okay.
So everything that I have here in front of me is dirty, ugly versions of copy that is on the website in some way, shape, or form.
And my question was, what is business, building off Rebecca's general questions, what is business's role and responsibility, if any, in Metro funding and reform? According to MetroNow and those Coalition for Smarter Growth. For example, I know property taxes, other taxes, hotel and guarantor taxes are being considered in the Virginia General Assembly. Yeah, where does MetroNow stand on those issues, and how can WMATA better engage and partner with business so that we can all grow together in a responsible and sustainable way?
So to your first question about where MetroNow comes down on particular funding sources. We are wanting to see a commitment of no less than $500 million. If only it were $500,000, that would solve so many problems. No, $500 million in additional bondable, very important, dedicated, very important, long-term, very important funding per year. And we want to see that under the existing formula. Not because the existing formula isn't worth looking at, but because we're working under a very tight legislative timetable and things are complex enough as it is, and we've already, as a region, come at some point to consensus on the current formula. So let's take our consensus points where we can get them and work with the current formula. The way that $500 million breaks out, by the way, is $167 for Maryland, $154 for Virginia, and $178 for the district. We would also like to see $150 million annually from the feds.
But in terms of business, like, do they,
I will say yes. So within those existing formulas, MetroNow's position is that each jurisdiction should determine how to fund their share. So you will never hear MetroNow coming out in favor of a regional across-the-board solution, something like the sales tax that was,
okay.
That is not our position.
Gotcha.
We want to see, we're very pragmatic on that point. We want to see each local jurisdiction come up with something that works for it.
Makes sense for business groups. Yeah, I mean, not, I mean, like a consensus group.
Yep.
Yeah, whatever. How about the second question? How can WMATA better engage and partner with business to, you know, offer services? Or is there any vision towards that? Like,
it is not. So MetroNow has to date been very focused on the immediate. I think that's a great question. And if I were to come back in April or May, once we've all gotten out of the fact that some of my colleagues who were supposed to be here tonight are still stuck in Annapolis testifying, we might have a better answer for you on that. It's certainly worth thought and merit. We've just been so laser focused on the legislative sessions right now that it honestly hasn't come up in a way that we've talked about to have a consensus position to share.
So the role and responsibility is fairly tailored and limited. So far?
So far, yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Paul.
Thanks for coming, Amy. It's good to finally meet you. I have a couple quick questions, I guess concerns, kind of piggybacking on what some of the other people have said. The I don't know, if kind of a history behind this. I remember back in 2003, that seems like ancient history, but there was a referendum to, I think it was for 1% sales. I think it might have been a sales tax for transportation.
Sales tax 2002, 2003.
Yeah. And it didn't, I think it lost in a margin of 2-1. And you're talking about bright blue, Northern Virginia, you know, very Democratic. So my question is, or one of my questions is, the likelihood of that being put in front of the voters again, I don't know if there's been any political polling on it, but my guess, my intuition from 50,000 feet is probably not, especially with the bad, you know, every time something bad happens in Metro, there's quite a lot of online chatter, and I imagine that reflects a lot of the sentiment in the region. So you're kind of punting when you say, well, we'll let every jurisdiction figure it out, but at the same time, that's kind of the...
We are seeing legislation move forward. Yep. Great question. And I am being very careful to stay within what are actually MetroNow consensus views here tonight and a lot of things we simply have not talked about or we have not come to consensus on. And so those are not things that I can speak on behalf of MetroNow for. That said, yes. Yes. That is one of the many reasons that you will not hear MetroNow coming out in favor of a regional sales tax, is we don't even have to come up with whether we think it's a good idea or not because it's politically unfeasible. So that makes that one quite easy. There was a DC council hearing this morning. I've literally been on conference calls all day and haven't had a chance to read the meeting report out memo that's sitting in my email, but it was DC has been in the position of looking at a sales tax within the district. One of the, and this is not the position of MetroNow, this is an explanation, one of the appealing things about a sales tax, it is easy to understand, it is simple to sell, and it is relatively easy to implement, which makes it to many people, very attractive. That said, for all the reasons that you highlighted, Paul, yeah. It will be interesting to see how the district moves forward. That's really the place that a sales tax, to the best of my knowledge, as of this morning, is seriously being under consideration. Virginia, again, since I read my emails this morning, is crazy complicated between the NVTA structure of how money floats back and forth between Northern Virginia and the state, and then it bounces back and forth, and then hopefully makes its way into regional transit funding. Things that are in the legislation that we are hoping to see move forward include a floor. Hold on. I'm going to read it to you because I've got it right here. Also on the legislative activity page of the website if you want to reference later. So SB 856, HB 1319 would cover the $154 million of Virginia's share. It would be a mix of state and local funds. It would include a contingency about the implementation of a reform board, as well as DC and Maryland doing their part. The current proposal includes $85 million redirected NBTA funds, $65 million in new funding from grantors and hotel taxes, and a regional gas tax floor. And we would like to see that legislation move forward. And as a matter of fact, we sent out a public email blast this afternoon encouraging folks to write their legislators to see that move out of committee tomorrow.
All right. Can I ask a few kinds of other? Is that okay? Now, I'm kind of glad you said, like, we were looking at businesses, but obviously, just kind of reiterate what Colin said, that we're the customers, obviously, or, you know, all of us are, so... it would be nice if we could have some, if the riders could have some sort of official involvement. And I think you're right, though. It's like you can get 10 riders in a room, and all of a sudden, and in a website, and boom, you're a group. And I don't. It seems like there's so many groups out there, and you know, I can name like 10 of them off the, you know, five of them off the top of my head, and it's like you're all doing six different things. And it would be nice if we. There was some sort of communication working together toward things. I'm not saying we're always going to have consensus. I know that's tough. It's like herding cats. But I feel like there's got to be some way that all these organizations can start working together or you know, someone has an idea, another person has another idea. There could be some sort of go-between. And because if not, you've just got an alphabet soup of organizations that are all doing 28 different things. This is more of a comment. It's more, not really a question, but it's just more of a, oh, there's another organization. And I know you guys are doing some good things, but it's more like, well, where do the riders get involved? Where do, you know, where's the money going to come? Where's money coming from? I mean, there's so much that has to be taken care of. And messaging is very important as well, especially when you're trying to get people to do things like tax themselves. So the more involvement you can get from regular people, you know, like you said, a million riders or a million rides every single day, all you need is a small portion of that, and you can make things happen. So I don't know. I mean, maybe we can talk a little bit offline, and you know, I can we can have a conversation about that. But
I know the mic isn't picking up my frantic head nodding back and forth as you're sharing that comment. I will say that. As both a private activist and a professional advocate, I'm very fortunate to, you know, be the closest, like one of the closest things that our region has to something like New York's strap hangers or a lot of other large metropolitan areas with good transit do have those sorts of groups. My office, the Coalition for Smarter Growth, works on metro and land use, and not just metro, but all public transportation and all transit. And we have definitely seen the limitations that this interdisciplinary approach leads. There is definitely a need for that kind of rider voice in the region. It's something that in my 10 years of living and working in the DC region and caring a great deal about metro, I think about in the shower every morning. And it's very exciting to know that other people are talking about it too, but unfortunately don't have any answers yet. Let's keep that going.
Right. All I have right now.
Rebecca?
One other question, and actually kind of thinking back to Paul. In terms of either Metro Now or Smarter Growth, Coalition for Smarter Growth, have you guys taken any stance on fair fares, which one of the riders mentioned, which I think could be a great way for your entity to get that buy-in from riders who could definitely benefit from smart-minded growth, but also affordable transit. And then also, have either groups taken a position on the Fare Evasion Decriminalization Act, which is currently in subcommittee? ACLU and several other groups have testified that fare evasion being criminalized disproportionately affects people of color, low-income people, people with disabilities. And if your entities, either one or both, took statements in support of folks, I think that that could also bring, you know, more reputation to at least Metro Now, or at least more buy-in from riders, and then perhaps more more folks, you know, hearing your call to action. Thank you.
There were like four different sub-questions in there, and I want to answer them all, so please help me. Yes. So let's start, I'll start with the easiest, most straightforward answer first. Decriminalization is something that we've been so busy working in Annapolis and Richmond on dedicated funding and reform that it's a little outside of the scope of when you introduce something that new to a consensus-based group. Honestly, it hasn't bubbled up enough to have any sort of talking points or official positions yet. I could certainly tell you how I know many of the individual groups feel about it. I cannot do that because we have not come to a consensus decision about it. Your points about buy-in and leadership are both things we know and points very well taken that we want to do better on. And I will say that on behalf of both Metro Now and the Coalition for Smarter Growth. I can speak a little bit more deeply about CSG, particularly on the fairness aspect. We have at many points in our illustrious 20-year history spoken out about fare increases, budget cuts, service changes, disability access. God, there have been so many iterations of that on our Metro page of our website that I can't even keep track. It feels like it's the constant drumbeat, and it is always an uphill battle. It is something that is deeply embedded in our mission as the Coalition for Smarter Growth and something we care very deeply about. As with any organization, and I would say that to some degree this applies to both Metro Now and to CSG, I wish we had the capacity to do all of the things that are deserving of our attention at once.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy. Thank you very much for coming to talk to us. Any further questions? Any members of the public have any questions they want to bring up? Sure. Come on up.
That's what I'm here for. While you are getting seated and getting your mic turned on, I will say that for anybody listening or tweeting at home, we are having a Metro Now Twitter town hall rescheduled from me being so sick on Monday to not so sick and with help this Friday at 4 to 5 p.m. It will be the first of many, but that is the first one that we are having. So if you have follow-ups from tonight or anything else, that is an excellent next opportunity, and you can also always email us. There's an email address at the bottom of the website that I can vouch forwards directly to me and to our campaign manager, Claire Flannery, every day as it happens. It's in the footer of the website. So I can also just tell you it's info@metronow.com, but if you go to the bottom of the website, it's always there.
No, where is the town hall?
On Twitter.
Oh, virtual town.
Everywhere with an internet connection.
Something that piqued my interest, I'm James, something that piqued my interest when you were discussing different metrics that you could use to gauge whether or not things have improved, will improve with regards to any funding or reform. I would ask, you know, where Metro Now is thinking that information would come from, just considering some of the less public positions that, you know, Metro would take with regards to disseminating that information. I know that the offices, some of the offices that compile that information and are responsible for distributing it, also state that they their interests lie with making Metro look good. So that would seem like a pretty obvious conflict of interest with regards to coming to a consensus as to whether or not any funding or reform was working. So I'm just wondering if that is something that you could speak to today or something that you hope to be able to speak to down the line.
I'll speak to it a little bit today and hope to be able to speak to it more down the line, particularly as legislation continues to move forward. One of the great things is that as legislation is actively moving in Annapolis and Richmond right now and moving any second now in D.C., for example, just today, possibly last night, we had a third piece of legislation introduced in Annapolis on the OIG's office specifically. Haven't read it yet, so I'm going to tell you that I can't tell you any more on that because I've literally been on conference calls all day, but got the email that that happened. So there are pieces moving on that. Some of it will likely come legislatively in terms of legislating exactly what those metrics are. And some of it, speaking as a transit advocate, will likely very much need to come from cultural changes within the organization that stem from change happening on a more macro basis. Things like staff culture and when and how metrics are delivered and things like that are fundamentally staff items. And so it will have to be a sort of an integrated approach. But Metro now does not specifically have a position that I can share with you on that, but I can speak from conversations that advocates have had with members of Metro Now, that is sort of, Metro Now is no different than anyone else in terms of the wisdom that it is a many-headed beast that we will need to approach on many levels.
I have one last question about Metro Now, and I know it's a coalition with members and everything, but are there any other mechanisms by which riders, other organizations, businesses, nonprofits can provide input to Metro Now in terms of their future direction? Or I know you guys are very focused on funding and
yes,
reform.
Yes, there are. I have an answer to this one. So, okay, many. Number one, you can sign up for our email list, which is our petition. We have specifically made the petition so general that's basically, I support Metro being better, that...
What happens with that data?
It's currently sitting in our database, and at a key point, we hope, as soon as it will be useful in the legislatures, we hope to use it.
Does it get sold or...
No. And we actually have privacy policies in place for that. They are long and legalistic, and I am not going to read them to you here now.
Is the data stored for a long, indeterminate amount of time? Is there a policy on that? Like, is it 30 days, a week?
In terms of data, the MetroNow data is governed under the MetroNow operating agreement.
Okay.
Which
that's
I,
public, right? Or not really?
It is not yet. No, yeah. It is what organizations sign when they become organizational members of MetroNow. We do have data best practices in place. The Coalition for Smarter Growth is actually the stewarding organization for that data. As the local activists, we were the ones who had the infrastructure in place to handle that. So all of that data is governed under the Coalition for Smarter Growth operating privacy policy, which I wrote like 3 years ago and look at every year and is online. And I can follow up with you on where it is. I think it's probably at smartergrowth.net/privacy, but it might be smartergrowth.net/yourprivacy or something like that. So we actually do comply with all industry best practices, yada, yada, data collection, security, never sell your data, unsubscribe anytime, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that was one question. Engagement, yeah. How to get involved as a member of the public. So you can join our mailing list and sign our petition. If anyone does not want to sign our petition but join our mailing list, you are also welcome to email us. The email is at the bottom of the website, info@metronow.com, and let us know that. We'll be happy to add you. We also are getting going on a series of events like this where we are listening. I will take my notes and input from folks tonight and put it in my fancy spreadsheet, which is where everything MetroNow lives. I am keeping all of feedback in an anonymized, unless folks have asked me to follow up with them, spreadsheet that we will then be using to collect and look at patterns and trends and data. So, for example, the Twitter Town Hall on Friday night, one of my staff members will be sitting there faithfully putting things into the spreadsheet for ideas, questions, feedback, et cetera. Other ways you can get involved, you can use our take action tools. Right now there is one live. You can find those on the Get Involved page of our website, metronow.com/get-involved, to email your legislators. We are very democratically minded. Someone pointed out on Twitter this afternoon that you can, in fact, take our message and throw it away and write your own message with your own thoughts there. We encourage that. We want everyone and anyone who has an opinion on Metro to be contacting their legislators. They cannot hear too much from any rider anywhere on what they have to say. Now, it is, you know, an industry standard engagement tool, which means that if you type in your DC address, you're not going to be able to email a Virginia legislator. You have to wait till the DC one comes out, but that's pretty standard. Any Save the Whales, et cetera, has that. And then beyond that, we are in the planning phases of looking at a formal mechanism for engagement.
Okay.
But honest to God, we're working 12 to 14 hour days of getting through legislative season. And I have a full-time job on top of that.
Oh, you do?
So it's...
That's more growth.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have things like grant reports to existing funders due and other priorities that we're working on, like bus lanes, that all still have to move forward. So to say nothing of things like budgets and tax season. So we are working on all of that. We are unfortunately mere mortals. If anyone here has cloning technology, please let me know. We would love to put it to use.
I know we recently started Twitter, and even though we may not agree with everyone on Twitter on what everyone says, I cannot help but admire just the level of activism and engagement from everyone there.
Yes, there is there is an amazing
ridiculous
Twitter community that we are trying to engage and make the most of.
Awake every hour.
We work very hard to respond on at least a daily basis. I could spend 24 of my hours every day on Twitter responding to everyone who tweets at us, and then I would do nothing else. But we do work to respond, and sometimes it takes me a while to go back to our policy wonks and get answers or things like that. But we are very much listening on Twitter.
Cool. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
One last question, and then we will move on to a discussion of REC's operational review.
Okay. Amy, one of your main points in starting off was trunking the size of the board. What pushback have you had from board members on that? The reason I ask is because a group of us did meet with the Virginia board members back in December. They didn't mention Metro Now by name, but they said they were talking about the report that was made to
the LaHood report.
Yes, and they were pretty. Actually, they were very candid, which is surprising for elected officials. They were pretty candid with, they didn't think it would help. They thought it was just window dressing. I don't know what pushback they've given to you guys or the Federal City or any of your members on that. But like I said, they were very candid with not changing the board size.
We have heard, and I'm talking about the greater activist community as opposed to Metro Now formally. Some on that, not as much as one possibly might expect. Some of the legislation moving forward does include that. The question I actually hear more is whether or not it is feasible to trim the size of the board without opening the compact. That was everybody's favorite question for several weeks. And the answer is, we think so, probably according to the lawyers. As not a lawyer myself, that's the best answer I can give you on that. But we've actually heard more concern on that than we have on the effectiveness. Thank you all so much for the opportunity. I will hang out here as long as I can before I have to crash and eat dinner and go home and go to sleep. But we are also, again, always available online, on Twitter, on the website. Please, if you have questions, we want to hear them from you. We won't always have the answers you want, particularly in the time frame you want them, but we are listening, and we are truly, earnestly wanting more input, as much as we've gotten off very fast because of the legislative season. We don't want this to just flame through the legislative season and then burn out. We want to build a longer-term, more cohesive, more inclusive tent. So different things are moving at different speeds. Thank you all so much for your opportunity tonight. I'm so sorry to have kept you so long. I hope I was not sleep together pudding. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. And there are crackers and cookies and cheese, oh my, over there if that helps forestall any crashes coming. You are welcome to them. Okay. Before I forget, because there's a significant chance that I might before the end of this, has anybody found any reason not to approve the minutes, the January minutes? Yes, Deb.
First of all, this is not a complaint. John, thank you so much for putting them together. I know you're just flying, trying to help us out here, and so I'm glad that we got them. But since we just got them, I haven't looked at the whole thing, but in the section when we were talking about the number of applications received and whatnot, I don't know if you remember this because I was the one involved. I did ask for confirmation that in the past we had received 400 to 500 applications per, time of recruitment, I guess, recruitment season. And it was confirmed that 450 to 500 applications were received at each recruitment, and that Lorraine had mentioned that this recruitment seemed quite short, and then we found out that appropriately there were only 100 applicants received this time. And the last piece of that discussion that I would like to see in the minutes was that we mentioned and confirmed that every season that they do appointments with applications, they do identify alternates, and that there were currently alternates sitting on deck ready to take appointments. And so, the question was, why were those alternates not moved forward? And, of course, we know now there's a little bit bigger picture. But I would like those numbers included in the minutes if possible, please.
Jan's busy taking notes over there. Anything else for the minutes?
That weren't already mentioned previously, or I guess they all should be re-mentioned now, perhaps?
Re-mentioned.
Okay, I'll just go for it. So the Budget and Finance Committee should be renamed the Program, Projects, and Planning Committee. I think the committee name was mixed up on page 3.
Got it.
Yep, I think that's just a minor thing there.
Okay. Also, thanks, one John. Other very minor thing, Safety and Security Committee. Security is misspelled.
You're right.
Yeah.
So with those minor, relatively, additions or changes to the minutes, all in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? Okay. Minutes approved with those changes. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
One abstention.
Got it.
All right. With that, I am going to look to you, John, to start us off as we talk about the RAC operational review. As I'm sure that most of you, at least those of you on the RAC, sitting around the table, are aware, the board and or staff, it's a little unclear to me exactly where this originated, is considering what exactly RAC should look like in the future. As part of that, they've asked us all to fill out the SWOT analysis. Everybody loves a good SWOT analysis. So I believe that most of us have returned those to John.
I think I got 9.
Okay.
Out of 14 or 15.
Okay. So I don't know exactly who will be looking at those. I presume they will be going to the board.
Mm-hmm. They have them.
Okay. So the board will be taking a look at those and seeing what it is that we have to say. But I am curious if John can provide us with any feedback on exactly what the staff in particular might be thinking about the future of the RAC.
Well, so I'm gonna back up and start out because it sounds like there have been a lot of conversations going on about this. And I think one of the first questions that I think people are asking is why this, why now? And, you know, this, as you know, or may or may not know, when Joy moved to a new position within the organization, that was sort of the latest iteration in the changes to staff support for the RAC that have taken place over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. You know, previous to, or about 4 years ago, you know, there was a dedicated staff coordinator in the Office of the Board Secretary. That was me. Then it was James. Then when James left, that function moved to the Office of Customer Research, and the staff coordinator position was eliminated. Eventually, that role fell to Joy, and with Joy's departure, staff support has bounced back to the Office of the Secretary, and one of the sort of practical things that we're trying to figure out is, you know, what is support for the RAC going to look like? The other part of that is noting the large number of not just reappointments that were up in December, but vacancies that were up in December. We went back and looked through this 50% number that was noted in Mr. Evans' letter to you all is not just a one-year thing. It's an average of, you know, the past 5 years of, you know, there's been X amount of turnover on the RAC. And, you know, I think that was something we wanted to get our hands around. If there's that much turnover, is the RAC experience, I guess it led us to ask the question, us as staff, you know, is the RAC experience what people expect or what people, you know, think it should be? And, you know, both in terms of what are you getting out of it as members, and then what is, you know, what in terms of expectations are being met for or from the board and from staff in terms of, you know, actionable information or, you know, suggestions that, you know, suggestions of changes to policies and those kind of things. And, you know, in addition to that, the RAC has been around. The RAC was conceived in 2005. So it's been, and I feel very old to say this, but it's, you know, the RAC has been around for 12 years now. And the world has changed significantly since 2005. It doesn't seem that long ago, but there weren't smartphones, there wasn't Twitter. You know, the internet more than likely involved maybe not a dial-up modem, but you know, it definitely. I mean, I didn't have, you know, there wasn't Wi-Fi any place. There are a lot of different ways to get information, I guess, is the point. And how the rack fits into that, you know, I think is part of something that should, you know, that maybe it's time for a look at. What we heard, you know, and that was somewhat borne out, I think, by what we heard from the SWOT analysis. There were sort of three main themes that emerged. One, questions or concerns about the RAC's structure and its staff support and staff interaction, interaction between the board and the RAC, and the flow of information, both coming to the RAC and coming from the RAC in terms of the information that you all get from Metro staff and from the board, and then what happens to the information that the RAC provides to the authority. So, you know, and there were a lot of different, I don't want to say a lot, but there were a couple different opinions or responses in terms of what the RAC's role should be. You know, and so this we see, both the board and staff see as an opportunity to make service on the RAC, you know, more impactful, more engaging, you know, maybe a little bit more, what's the right word? You know, again, to make it worth y'all's while, we recognize that this is something that you as volunteers devote a significant amount of time to. And, you know, it's also something that requires staff work as well. And we want to make sure that as sort of stewards of public resources and of your time, that we're doing that in the most effective way. So, you know, we don't, I will say this from a staff perspective, but I think the board can agree that I don't think we want to have a deliberative process to review the RAC's responses and look at, you know, options moving forward. I think we're all hopeful that this is going to be a relatively quick process. I mean, within the next, you know, weeks and months, not months and seasons. And, you know, that's sort of where we are. We are on stage one, which is, you know, we now know what y'all think. And the board has all this information. And, you know, we'll be back with possible next steps. So I'm sure that probably raised more questions than it answered. So I'm gonna stop talking and try and address those.
Thank you. Thanks for the summary. A couple questions. So in the Washington area, because I've worked in nonprofits, I've worked with boards before.
Sure. And I'm gonna ask this just to make sure that your mic's on and you speak into it, so that
okay.
When I try and re-listen
right,
to this tomorrow,
I
appreciate. I appreciate you looking at me.
So, anyway, I've worked on boards, nonprofit boards before, and I've experienced turnover when I've been a staff member working with nonprofit boards. So what is the average turnover rate of nonprofit board members in Washington, D.C.? Don't know.
Don't know.
Don't know. Could be 75%. For all we know, could be 75%. Could be less. Could be more. So I would expect that the board would certainly consider not just the RAC with some arbitrary number, but the RAC in the community it exists in. And if the turnover of board members is between 30% and 50%, then the RAC is not unusual in any aspect in terms of that. I don't know what the answer is, but the other question I need to, because we are an advisory, we're a partner with the board, and you know, we as an advisory committee need to also understand our partner. So my question is the board completing SWOT analysis of of their involvement with the RAC so that we have a better understanding how we can contribute
So yes, with A, it's probably not going to take the same form, but yes, I think that is definitely part of the conversation. What does the board need / want from you all to be advised?
And is that a conversation that we will be a part of, or is that a conversation that the board will have amongst itself?
That is a conversation that I think you will be a part of. I'm not sure of the full timeline of the process, but yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Rebecca.
Hi. Okay, so first I just want to start by saying that the completion of the SWOT analysis from RAC members was done in a vacuum. So for you or for WMATA or for the board to believe that the SWOT analysis is really a reflection of what we believe our role is and how valuable we think that we can, make this relationship with the board, I think it's naive to say that that's truly reflective, because we were given this amongst rumors, we were told to complete it, and we have no idea about the conversations that WMATA is having with the staff, and we have no idea, or at least I don't, about the conversations that are coming from the board of directors, some sort of analysis about turnover, which is not really indicative of our mission, which was approved by the board to advise the board. You mentioned 2005 because that's when the board enacted the resolution to develop the Writers Advisory Council to advise them. And in September of 2017, the board of directors renewed its, they voted for our bylaws, which we amended and were approved and, signed off by the board. If there is an interest from the board of directors in restructuring the RAC, in order to continue to develop our communication and relationships, I do ask that something be put in writing more than just the letter that we received, because we can't have informed conversations with what can improve the writer's experience, what can improve RAC's effectiveness, if we are operating in a vacuum. Part of the problem that there may be turnover, sometimes we're given less information on issues that come out, and if you think that the board of directors wanted a writer's advisory council, but we are not receiving maybe accurate information from staff or board, it just, to me, communicates an ever-growing need for the RAC, because we're often in the dark, even more so than writers. Thank you.
I mean, point taken. I'm not sure. Point taken. I think that's...
Sita?
First of all, thanks for giving us some updates and being an advocate for us. I think we really appreciate your work in standing up for the RACans. I just sort of want to echo the comments before. I have two questions. First of all, just to clarify, you said this process should take hopefully a few weeks or a month. So that's right?
That's the goal. I don't want to put an exact date on it because I don't want to put an exact date on it. And two, I think we want to make sure that we get this right. And,
right.
I say that from as a staff person, I don't think we want to rush this to meet some kind of arbitrary deadline.
Sure, and, sure.
You know, with the understanding that, this does feel a little limbo-esque, especially to y'all.
Yeah, and especially, I sort of asked this question on behalf of all the vacancies that we have, and sort of the longer that the RAC operates with those vacancies, so less effectively we can do our work. And so I just wanted to ask if, if indeed this is going to take a few weeks or a month, which hopefully it will, that at the next RAC meeting we can at least sort of start seeing, who those appointments are. And, even if we get those, even if those appointments are named before we, officially finalize or conclude the RAC's restructuring, at least it will help give us a sense of, who will be taking on in the future, and how those members can sort of be effectively ingrained into the RAC going forward. I don't necessarily think that, you know, we have to wait several months. I mean, if this does take months and months down the line, I think it would be counterproductive to wait so long with so many vacancies being unfilled. And I guess my second question is, you had mentioned that, you know, once this SWOT analysis is sort of reviewed, the board's going to be coming back to us with some options. Will we have a say in sort of which of those options we'll be pursuing?
I don't know process-wise what that's going to be. So, TBD. I think there'll be more conversations and definitely more conversations with the RAC about this, but, you know, I'm not sure what the shape of those are going to be.
Deb?
So a couple, just one, two, three kind of related questions. Will the RAC leadership be able to see the surveys?
I will have to check.
Okay.
You mean the analyses that you all did?
Yeah, the surveys that were turned in, would the RAC leadership team be able to see those? And related to that, when you said, I think you said that you received 9 surveys back?
It was either 9 or 10.
Okay.
But
so was that, you received 9 or 10 of the 14, and does that mean there were 9 that were acceptable, and you received 14 and you rejected a few, or was that just the total?
I didn't reject any. That was
okay.
The total number.
None
of,
were rejected.
Of
okay.
People that emailed me back.
Great. Okay, that's good. And then the last thing, just kind of to wrap all that up, is you were mentioning that, you know, there's some rumors circulating and whatnot. First of all, I'll speak for myself. It just kind of came out of the blue, felt a little blindsided. And I tried to turn it around to tell you, like, err on the side of grace that this is something that's an opportunity for us. And so that's what I did mention in my survey, was to thank for the opportunity. But I think, you know, had we had a discussion ahead of time that, hey, the board wants to reevaluate the RAC and here's why, and as a result, we'd like you know, it seems like if we could have known the reasoning for that ahead of time, and then that later on said, hey, per our discussion, here's what's going on, I think that's what's kind of generating some of the rumors. And I personally think that the 50% mantra that keeps being thrown out there is a little bit of a red herring. The fact that we are down at 50% now is because reappointments weren't made as seats became available. So I think there's a duality of, you know, shared responsibility here, and the questions on the survey that we weren't required to answer, but they were guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
From my opinion, they were trying to incriminate the RAC as being responsible for the turnover, and I don't think that's true at all. I think the RAC itself is a very viable entity, and we've worked well together. And so I felt like, and I could have misread it 100%, and the misread was because it blindsided me, but I kind of looked like we were trying to find out how can we prove the RAC is not viable by getting the RAC to acknowledge it's not viable. That's kind of how those questions came across to me. So I elected to, you know, just do the open-ended part, as you mentioned. So anyway, I just wanted to share, you know, those concerns. And I really do hope that our leadership team will be able to see those surveys so they can see the actuality instead of just a summary. Thank you.
No, thank you. And it is helpful to hear your perspective, because, you know, I will say that, you know, sometimes we are, as staff, too far inside it. So this is, you know, this is good to hear.
Colin?
Sure. So first, I think that this is an opportunity for the RAC. I do think that we should probably have an honest examination of, A, our viability as a body, and B, recognize that we do indeed and have for quite some time had an issue with turnover. But the question is why. Certainly, you know, there are, you know, I think typical, you know, issues with, you know, people getting too busy with work and, you know, illnesses and that sort of thing. But I also think we've seen a trend of you know, over the years, folks coming on and either, as John mentioned, encountering an experience that is not reflective of their expectations, or simply being frustrated with the state of things. And I expect that will be, or I hope that will be reflected in the survey responses. I mean, I certainly attempted to hone in on those issues myself in my response. And I think that some of the defensiveness that is being expressed now is a symptom of the environment in which the RAC has been operating, which is an environment that is lacking in information, both from the staff and from the board. I mean, this is an agency that still struggles, despite a new general manager and a commitment to transparency, with transparency. There should be almost nothing that this agency develops from the policy standpoint, from a data standpoint, from a basic information standpoint, that isn't widely available via its website. It's a public agency. It is beholden to the public. And even those of us who are tasked with advising this agency on its own operations and improvement on behalf of the writers and to the board, struggle to get very basic information. And John, this is not a criticism of you. I would, you know, I think you've been very helpful in your short time with us. But, you know, I feel this frustration. I know, you know, former members of the RAC who have left because they feel like we're unable to accomplish our mission. A mission which, by the way, you know, either the WMATA board or the general counsel attempted to amend in our bylaws. I mean, if you're going to, you know, propose that we remove the word advise from our very mission statement, what message does that send to this body as to its value to this agency? And so I think, you know, part of the reason that we've seen turnover and part of the reason that this, you know, this body perhaps struggles is because the agency does not value us. The board does not appear to value us. And so, you know, that's got to change. Or, you know, cut us loose.
This will be a fun recording to review later. Paul?
Thank you, Colin. That was very articulate and pretty much explains how I think a lot of us in this room feel. Maybe I read too many Dilbert cartoons back in the 90s, but when someone asked somebody to do a SWOT analysis, as Deb pointed out, it's like asking a bad employee to write their own performance evaluation before you fire them. I mean, I'm being a little glib about that, but I think that was the sentiment, that is the feeling that I had when I saw the questions that were submitted to me. So I got to ask the question that everyone has said, kind of, but I'm just going to go right to the point. Is dissolution of the Writers Advisory Council part of an option that's being looked at?
So.
No, it's no so, John. John, I like you, but there's no so. It's a yes or no question, and I think we might have some bloggers that are interested in this answer.
Okay. Do you want to let me answer the question, or do you want to make a point? You can do either, but not both.
Oh, sorry, I was addressing what Patrick said, but yes, please do.
So I am not going to preclude the board from doing anything that is well within their prerogative. So I can't sit here as a staff person and say absolutely not, because you know what? Nothing in life is certain. Can I tell you that is dissolution of the RAC being seriously looked at? No, it is not. Is that clear enough?
I would say it is clear enough.
Thank you.
We'll take it.
You know, and I also want to apologize if the rollout of the SWOT analysis was a little bit clunky, but you know, I think we felt that it was I will say this as me. But I think staff felt, and the board felt, that it was important to get your all's opinion. You know, maybe a SWOT analysis wasn't
the best way to go about it. I'm not sure what would have been, but you know, you're welcome to freeform or you know, answer whatever you like. But if it comes down to getting your opinion via SWOT analysis or not getting your opinion at all, I will go with option A.
If we have lots of board members come here and they say the most glowing things about us, like, oh, we thank you for all the time and all the effort you've done, and I kind of take that at, you know, I'm kind of new here, John. I kind of took it at face value, and then you, as Deb said, you get kind of blindsided with, well, here's something, and oh, by the way, boom, here comes a rumor. Now, I don't know if you weren't a part of that, but the whole thing is I have an active imagination, and I think a lot of other people do, and no one ever comes to us and says, by the way, we think you're doing a good job, but we're concerned about this. It just sort of comes on all at once, like, we think you're doing a good job, but, oh, by the way, you're going to be restructured, or you're going to have to do something that's going to make you worry or wonder if there is going to be a Writers Advisory Council. I just want to admit that, or I just want to point out that there is nobody else. There are a lot of groups that say, that come around and say, we are representing writers, but really it's just, as Amy pointed out earlier, it's just 10 people on a website. Our job is to advise the board, and we're the only group besides the AEC that does that, and I think there's some real value in that, as opposed to saying, all right, we're going to cut you guys all loose, and basically you've created 20 other people who don't feel that Metro is really listening to Ryder. So keeping us internal is very, very critical to the board's mission, to management, to the staff, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, and I think that's part of the recognition of, you know, let's see what opportunities, if any, there are to improve, you know, sort of improve and make sure that the RAC is meeting everyone's expectations, not just both, but the board, staffs, RAC members.
Let's put the O in SWAT.
There you go.
Thank you, John. I do appreciate your answers. And you know, sorry if I'm a little rough on you, but you're the only staff person
here.
It's fine,
but it's also hard to, and that, I think, is what is frustrating to me, is that it's very difficult to just prove a negative. You know, I can tell you, hey, you're probably not going to get hit by a bus on your way home from this meeting tonight, but I can't say that with 100% certainty. Maybe not the best analogy, but...
That is an awkward analogy for a WMATA staffer.
You know, I mean, sorry, maybe you won't get struck by lightning on the way home tonight. The chance is pretty low, but nothing is 100%, so I'm not the type of person that's going to sit here and tell you that you know, the chance is absolute zero. But I think the fact that we're going through this exercise should hopefully be a recognition of the board's commitment to keep the RAC around.
Continuing in the order in which folks have interested or have expressed an interest in speaking, Chris.
Thank you. I'll be quick. I started coming to these meetings 8 years ago, and I've been a RAC member, so I'm speaking from past experience as well as experience as a member. And 8 years ago when I started coming here, the only two faces that were in this room that are in this room now are Pat and John. 8 years ago, I've seen this table turn over, I couldn't tell you how many times. And I will say, in terms of effectiveness, the chair makes a huge difference. Catherine, you're a very effective chair, but I can tell you there have been some who've come through who have not been, and Pat may agree or disagree with me on that. I could name some names. But... But as far as retention and turnover, and again, I've been saying this for 8 years, I think the biggest problem is that you guys are sourced by staff. This council should be sourced from within. If staff wants to get a pool of candidates, you guys should approve those candidates before they show up here. Because how many of you showed up here not even knowing? Let me rephrase. Who here came to a RAC meeting before you were a member? And how many people not here who are now gone came to a meeting before they were a member? And this is what I'm talking about. The turnover problem starts with the sourcing of candidates. And I personally think everyone in this room is a great member, but there are people who have come through who have not been. And this is not what they've expected. I think if the board wants to reevaluate what the RAC does and how they operate, I think that's fine. But you need to stand your ground, as I've heard a lot of you do tonight, and say that the RAC has to be around and give good feedback on how to make it work. If you want good examples of how the RAC can work, go to an AAC meeting. The AAC has a dedicated staff person who does a wonderful job. In the past, it's been Ms. B. She's fantastic. The person they have now is fantastic. And someone from Metro sits right here. In fact, two or three people from Metro sit right here. And they answer the questions. And Pat can tell you the turnover on the AAC, like, you have to drag people away. Right, Pat?
They finally instituted term limits. I will say, if I can, Chris, I will say that one of the blessings that we have is that we have Christian Kent AGM.
Absolutely.
Who comes to the meetings, is as passionate as we are about what happens. And because he comes, all his people come.
Yeah. So I'll wrap it up by just saying, this can work. And I think there's enough brain power at this table right now to make this work. You need to make sure the board understands that you can make this work if you're given the flexibility to maybe tweak a few things. That's all. Thank you.
Joe, whose name tag has been going up and down like crazy.
So articulate. I saw it somewhat differently. I share the sentiments of all of my colleagues here on the board, on the council, in terms of, but I do also, in a sense, do want to thank the board and staff for giving us the opportunity for this SWOT analysis. I do think that with any organization, we need to take some time to pause, reflect, see how we could innovate, do things better. And I really do think that this was an opening and an opportunity for us to see where we actually stand with the board, if things are going well, how we can, you know, refine and do things better and be more effective for riders. I do think that, however, it was somewhat disappointing the way how rushed it felt almost, in the sense that we have vacancies on the RAC currently that aren't filled. We have reappointments that have yet to be made. We're not operating in full strength. And to do a SWOT analysis at this particular juncture when we're not, you know, at our strongest, we're at our weakest point, it seems. In the sense that if we had all the reappointments, all the members that we should have, doing a SWOT analysis at that point may be more effective or maybe a more accurate picture. So with that, I'm hopeful, and I continue to be optimistic at the real chance that this will be a good opportunity for the RAC moving forward and the board and the staff for us to align, to assess where we are, to align with the vision that we all share, and then to actually act on it. But when Paul mentioned that question, is it a dissolution of the RAC a real possibility? And of course, it's an option, a remote option, and I'm glad you confirmed that briefly. But yeah, that really kind of was the part where it just seemed counterproductive to lay this out without knowing whether or not it is. Like, we're all here out of good faith, and I think, yeah, I really think that it should be a way to improve the RAC and just coordination and collaboration, not just among the RAC and staff and board, but also among riders. I think there's a lot more that can be done to coordinate among Amplify, MVP, all these other groups as well to get more input and actually get out there with the riders And yeah, so I do hope and continue to believe that WMATA will not confirm the what I still believe to be the false narrative out there, that it doesn't care about writers. It does, but it could care more, a lot more about writers than it currently does now in a more transparent, co-creative, collaborative way. And I had a question between now and that arbitrary timeline, which I hope that there is a firm timeline, because how else do we create goals and backwards plan and all of that that's necessary to achieve something? What is the plan on the vacancies and the reappointments? I think there are a lot of dedicated RAC members that should be reappointed, at least with them. I think they should be reappointed. You don't need to grab new people from the street. We have dedicated members right here, and I think if there should be any compromise, that should be it. Like, we should at least get those reappointments for at least a year or however long that you guys envision this taking, but I don't know what else to say, I guess. But.
No, I take your point, and I will commit to going back to our legal counsel and seeing, you know, if that's an option in terms of reappointments. I think we don't want to
even like on an ad hoc basis, maybe like months.
Right, and right. I mean, I understand that would require, as far as I understand it, it requires a board action based on
Agreed.
The way your bylaws read. But exactly. You know, that I think merits some more digging into.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So.
A logistics question, if I can.
Go ahead.
Thank you. We have elections in April, correct?
According to our bylaws, yes.
Okay. So it would make sense, as far as getting new people in here, that's why we moved one of the reasons why we moved elections to April, so that people would have an idea, would be on the rack, as to who is running, and something about them. So, I mean, if a decision is not made soon, that moving of the elections was rather pointless. But of course, we didn't know that at the time. Something to consider.
Susa.
I'd like to make a suggestion that's based on a lot of the comments we've heard about us not knowing kind of what the board's intentions and thoughts are. And I think I feel very strongly that our next speaker at a full RAC meeting should be Jack Evans, and or other people from the board who are kind of leading this charge and, you know, proposing the options for the RAC's future. I think this is a conversation that we need to have with them face-to-face. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of opinions, but also I agree with what people have said before in that, you know, we should also be listening to them and what they want to see in a viable and helpful RAC. And so I'd ask that you could do everything in your power to kind of make that meeting happen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm very hopeful, though I understand the hope is not always a strategy. I'm very hopeful that at that point the board will be in a position to, you know, to, or a board member will be in a position to have that kind of, you know, they'll know enough from their analysis and their discussions to have that discussion with you. So, all righty.
Based on the fact that it's gone to the Business Oversight Committee for this discussion, a 1-2 punch of Jack Evans and Corbett Price would be ideal. I realize that might be asking a lot, but
that might be punchy. But we'll see what we can work out.
Who knows? Kenneth, did you want to pipe up here? We're happy to have you do so.
I was just curious in terms of whether, you know, I guess WMATA feels that with Amplify and having that, since that didn't exist, I guess, in 2005, whether they feel like they're getting input from other places. Is there some sort of, like, siloing of where they're getting input? Because I always wonder, like, you know, when people, for example, send an email or call their customer service number or, you know, what have you, does that just end up in some black hole? Like, what do they do with all that, you know, the input, basically? Like, I sometimes wonder whether, like, do you guys have access to Amplify surveys or customer service questions? Because, you know, there's not a lot of public input here. You know, do you guys have access to other public input via other
We do from social media, but that's fairly limited. From Facebook, Twitter, that's something that we've been more intentional about, just to be there. I mean, we're not pros at social media, as we all know, but to at least have some direct channel to the writers themselves so that, I mean, we've even talked about, you know, writer rallies or meetups at different metro stations. That's still something that's in consideration. But I think this is our main way, which is, I do think that there should be more coordination amongst these different groups and just expanding more platforms and channels for writers to go to get their input, because I know various RAC members also have gone out to various communities to get their input on the budget and on other issues that, like for elimination of different bus routes that are from their communities that they rely on and depend on.
I do wonder, like, you know, I was telling someone, I went to a meeting last week, and, you know, I'm not off during the day, so I don't have a chance to go to these daytime meetings and everything, but you do sometimes wonder, there was only, like, what, maybe 3 board members there? Like, you know, maybe I was wondering, like, do they record this and play this for the other, you know, what, is this board, like, 17 people? Do they play it for the other folks who aren't there? You know, where, you know, why, I don't know, like, it's a public entity, I'm not completely familiar with the exact, you know, structure and everything, but, you know, where do they get the input? Like, if they're not at these public hearings, if these aren't recorded and they're not listening to them later on, you know, do they sit up, you know, at night reading customer service surveys? You know, where do they get the input from the public? And when do they get the input from the public? You know, that was my 2 cents. Thank you.
Certainly.
One of the things that's really important, I know for the RAC, the chair of the board used to come at the beginning of the year and set out goals and things for you guys to do. And that's really important because it gives you a basis for your work plan and to move along with that. But in the last 2 years, a lot of things are happening day to day and changing with the system. And they are as worried about being dissolved as the RAC is worried about being dissolved. They're worried about meeting a budget shortfall. They're worried about federal support. And so they haven't been coming to you with all of the information that is going on in their meetings. And one of the things that we've found very valuable at the AAC is all of their committee meetings, finance, safety, customer service, whatever, are online. And you can either attend them here in person, you can follow them online live, or you can play the recording. They're all up there. And what we have done is we follow those. And then we make the request of John's counterpart to have the appropriate staff member come in to talk to us about that, and to find out what we can do to help find the solution. And so the information is really important, and unfortunately the current environment is that they don't have the time to tell you guys every week what's changed and what's going on. As recently as this week, the big issue is whether they're going to get the 10th year of PREA, PREA being their funding for the rail cars. And so it's something that you might request to talk to a staff person to what you can do to help that or help solve that problem. So just a pearl as to how the AAC works, that's maybe a little bit different of getting that information. Christian Kent is a big advantage to us. Christian Blake is also. But we ask the questions and ask them to bring in folks that can educate us into what's really needed.
Here, because this is exactly the type of insight, and there have been those type of interactions in the past as well. I think in the past couple of months or so, we're not doing that currently.
We'll keep going down the list of speakers until we hit 8:30. So, Rebecca.
I just want to circle back to the answer that you gave Paul's question with regard to whether dissolution was on the table for the board, and you mentioned that, of course, we can never really know, but it's not something that you were aware of as, like, top priority for the board. I guess my question is, when you speak about us or they or we, it's difficult for me to know if you're speaking as a WMATA staff member or as someone representative of the board, and I don't really know. So the answer to the question, like, is the board really, really considering this? Okay, well, maybe not, but my next question is, like, is WMATA staff considering that the RAC be disillusioned, or is that on the table? I mean, did this push come more from WMATA staff or directly from the board? It's a little confusing to me.
So this review came up as a result of the changes in staff support to the RAC. So, you know, in that there was no further, yes, in that it was a result of a staffing change.
Okay. So the SWOT analysis came from a lot of staff, not the board.
When you say came from, I mean, sort of. No, I'm just going to try. I'd like to try and frame it in a way in terms of the genesis of the idea to do a review was the result of a change in a necessary change in staff support for the RAC as caused by some personnel changes, or a particular personnel change, I guess. The board is in the driver's seat and gave the go-ahead to do a review. So, you know, we as staff, and I apologize, I'm probably not doing a great job in terms of my pronouns tonight. Staff can make suggestions or, you know, bring things up because we're here day to day. You know, I don't know that the change in staffing level for the RAC is something that would necessarily rise to the attention of a policy level board such as the board of directors. So it is something that staff brought to their attention, but then it is the board's purview in terms of, and it took that purview or it took that action in terms of authorizing staff to do the legwork for a review that board members will be conducting.
Just I guess to clarify, and thank you for helping me understand that. If the board of directors is considering this sort of perhaps on the request of WMATA staff, could it be the Writers Advisory Council going to the board and asking for more resources to be provided to WMATA staff so that WMATA staff isn't perhaps overloaded with a task that cannot be adequately held out? I mean, would that be helpful?
And I'm afraid I'm going to give an answer that is similar to the answer I gave to Paul in terms of, I mean, it's, you know, if the RAC feels that would be helpful, then you are, of course, more than welcome. I don't want to say that the RAC shouldn't do X or can't do X, or, you know what I mean? I don't arbitrarily put a muzzle on you. We're all adults here. You know, if you think something would be beneficial, then it, by all means, you're welcome to advocate for that. I think that at this point, in the process, it might be a little premature. But you know, again, I say that to try and just level with you in terms of, you know, I don't want to tell you what you can and can't do, but I also may suggest that it may be helpful until, you know, I take to heart the concerns raised that this is going on in a vacuum. And so, you know, as more information, as this process moves forward and there's more information available, it may be, you know, more strategic to wait until that time. Yeah, no, I...
Deb?
Real quick so Colin can go. I just want to make sure that Alian knew I agree about the opportunity that this presents, and I'm very grateful for it, and I put that in my survey that I saw this as an opportunity. I know a minute ago I seemed a little angst out, but the overall thing is I'm thankful for the opportunity. The question is, was the entire board aware that this SWOT survey was going out? Was it a vote from all board members to send the SWOT survey out, or was it just something that was sent out from Jack Evans and a few others?
So the entire board is aware of the review of the council. In terms of the specifics of the SWOT survey, the entire board has access to it. The Business Oversight Committee, Mr. Evans and the Business Oversight Committee, I don't know if authorize is the right word. But
I'm aware that they're aware now, but before the SWOT survey went out, was the entire board asked if it was okay to do this, and were they on board with it, or was it just a couple board members that sent it out, and then the rest of the board found out about it later? And, of course, you said they will be involved going forward, but the initiation of the survey, did all the board members know about that?
Specifically about the survey, I can't answer that question. I can say that the entire board was aware, or is, you know, was aware before it happened, as it got started, of the review of the RAC, and you know, and the idea that this would include getting your input. You know, did they specifically say, were the words SWOT survey specifically uttered? I don't know. I wasn't in the room. So again, can't.
So do you want to finish this off, Colin?
No, we're at time.
Thank you all for a vigorous discussion. I expect that we will see everybody here next month, March 7th, unless we're told between now and then that the RAC has been disbanded.
If that happens, I will commit to buying each and every one of you a beer at the Green Turtle.
And one last piece of information before I totally adjourn. There is somebody, apparently, who needs to be wished a happy birthday around this table.
One, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sita. Happy birthday to you.